This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
We'll talk some football with Connor Hughes in a few minutes of SNY. Also coming up a little bit later on, right after Sean's muchly hotly debated Cinco de Five-O list, we will unveil number 14 and number... Actually, no, it's number 12 and 11. I was a day behind. Number 12 and 11 in the 24 and 24. That's where we're hearing from a committee that's here at WFN. Not sure who's on the committee. The most memorable moments in New York sports. We are down to number 12 and 11. We're getting out of the nitty-gritty. The grand finale will be on Friday. In fact, beginning on Thursday, it'll be 4 a day. It'll be 8 through number 5 and then 4 through number 1 as we're going to find out the most memorable moment in New York sports throughout the week. That's coming up a little bit after 5 o'clock. Toll-free numbers 888-808-1019. Lee is calling from Deer Park. How you doing today, Lee?
Great. How are you guys doing today?
All good, man.
It's funny. I actually have a solution for your draft order conundrum here that is better than both the ideas. But it just shows, by the way, that you were talking before about the cap hit. It just shows you how terrible Joe Douglas was. He left this team in such a disaster that there literally is no right answer. You guys are talking about what's the best solution. The best solution is to not hire Joe Douglas 6 years ago, but that's...
Joe, the cap hits didn't really start until the Aaron Rodgers stuff.
after he was fired, exactly. Right. But here's the thing. So you talked before about the lottery, and the lottery's bad because the worst team could get like the fifth pick 1 year and then the seventh pick the next year and never really get that that franchise player that's really at the top of the draft. Giving it to a team that can tank, you want to limit the tanking. Here's what you do. You take the record average losses of the last 3 years because A, you're not leaving it up to luck, but then you're preventing teams. Nobody's going to tank 3 years in advance. That's insane. So, I mean, maybe a team will tank if they know they're a percentage point ahead or something like that.
That's interesting.
But even with a lottery, teams tank. So if you give the worst record of the last 3 years the best pick, and then a team that's doing really bad and fires their GM, the next GM then has almost like a couple of years of equity built in that he's taken over.
That's a really good idea.
I kind of like that.
I think that's a really good idea. Now, it's complicated, and it would make Sean's tank bingo very complicated as well, figuring out where we stand. Like, right now, under his plan, just for anyone who's like, what did he mean? Like, can you explain it again? You're averaging the last 3 years' win totals, and that determines the draft order?
So it gets really interesting when you think about a team, say like the Los Angeles Rams, who were like all in, forget my draft picks, I don't care, all in to win a Super Bowl, making trades, bringing in veterans, all that stuff. They actually do it, and then the next year they stink.
Right. They don't get that much of a benefit for it.
Then they don't get that much of a benefit because they've been good, meaning they won a Super Bowl, and then they were really bad. So they've been good for so long. Sucking for 1 year doesn't automatically give them the number two pick or number three pick.
Or like the Chargers last year wouldn't have been rewarded with Joe Alt for having a one-off year with your quarterback.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, it takes away the one. It's actually a really good idea. I'm trying to think. So
I like that.
How many games did the Giants win last year?
Oh, I could solve this for you, by the way. The Giants would have the number one pick.
Is that true? Yes, over the Raiders. Because
I'm going 5 years.
No, 3. Yeah. He said 3 years.
So 2022.
How many games did the Giants win last year? Was it 5 or 6?
6.
They won 6? So last year the Raiders won 8 games, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they were 2 games better. But then a year before that when the Giants won 9 games, the Raiders only won 6 games. So
that's 14 wins for the Raiders and and 15 for the Giants.
Yes.
I can tell you.
It'd still be close.
It would be.
But you know what?
It's a better debate. Like, it's a better drama. It's more drama.
But stuff. You know what the problem is?
I like that idea.
It's a very creative idea, but once we figure out the math, you're still rooting against your team. Like, at the end of the day, the Giant fan does the math and says, okay, we're
gotta
a game.
We've got to lose this many more.
Right.
Right, I hear you.
So it actually, it doesn't solve the inherent issue. It's creative, but it doesn't solve the issue that Giant fans are going to go into Sunday's game rooting for their team to lose. That's where we are. And I understand why. They lose, they have a chance to pick one or two. They win, they may pick eighth.
It was
a huge difference.
Carolina, New England, Arizona would be the order of the three picks.
Interesting. Let's go to Lawrence in Oklahoma. What's going on, Lawrence?
Thanks for taking my call, guys. Just to add to that conversation, even in a roulette where it's like you get a 2% better chance, I'm still rooting for the Giants to lose for a 2% better chance.
Yeah,
but,
I get you.
That's not why I called, though. Man, the Giants suck so bad. We're going to get a first-round pick, and we're going to draft a quarterback, and he's not going to be able to stand upright. What's the point in drafting a quarterback when there's nothing there for him to give him a good place to play? Like, man, trade the pick down and bring in Justin Fields. He'll cost us nothing, and I think he still has ball left in him. And Justin Fields needs to be on the radar for New York football 100%.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit earlier for the Jets, but I think it's also something potentially viable for the Giants. Say the Giants win two games, and they now all of a sudden they fall out of the top two pick, and they're not getting one of the quarterbacks. Well, you got to start thinking about who are the viable options that can play quarterback. Start for quarterback for me next year.
Well, I give you one better. What if you don't fall out of the top two? You draft a quarterback, but you want that quarterback to sit. Justin Fields still makes sense.
Yeah.
You may think that it's better for Shador Sanders or Cam Ward to wait and not play right away.
But I don't know if he's the right vet to, you know what I mean? Because he's still grinding to try to make it. He's only 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be 26 next year, but you know what I mean? He's only 25 years old. He's still grinding to be that guy.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's and he doesn't know it enough yet.
Right.
He's not veteran enough.
I'd be interested to see what kind of gig he gets next year.
Yeah.
Because he played relatively well for the Pittsburgh Steelers when he was playing, and they weren't winning games.
I think he'll be the most coveted quarterback for the team that isn't drafting Sanders or Ward that isn't high enough.
Sam Darnold will be more coveted than Justin Fields.
Well,
Sam Darnold may lead the Vikings to the Super Bowl.
The challenge with Sam is the number.
Like, right.
We talked about it before with the Jets. I mean, he's going to command. I look at the Spotrac thing, and it's the market value. It's usually you got to tick it up by, like, you know, 10% from what the calculated market value is.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to make $40 million.
That's crazy.
Right.
And it's nuts. Because Baker Mayfield is making 30-something, $38 million.
And this is where I would feel. Have I seen enough from Sam Darnold in 1 year with Kevin O'Connell to go, I'm comfortable giving him that? Or would I rather a one-off with Justin Fields and hope I strike gold like Darnold?
I get you. Joining us right now, guy does a great job for SNY, covering the Jets, the Giants, New York football. What a horrible state that is. The great Connor Hughes. Connor, thank you very much for coming on today. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I want to share my Belichick theory, and then you could tell me either, boy, okay, that's genius, Evan, or I'm a giant idiot. Bill Belichick is such a hateful man that he requested to meet with Woody Johnson just so Woody would have to beg him. So the Jets would get on their hands and knees and say, oh, Bill, dear Bill, we're such a horrible franchise. We need you. Please save us. So Bill could laugh at them and then leave the room. That's my theory on why Bill Belichick reached out to the Jets. Your thoughts?
Evan, it's kind of the opposite. It was that Bill called the Jets and to express an interest in their vacancy and to see if the Jets had an interest in him as well. And the Jets basically told him that, look, if we appreciate it, thank you, but this isn't something where we're going to basically stop everything just because Bill Belichick called us, and we're going to hire you here on December and then let you pick our next general manager and all that stuff. They were willing to talk to him. They were willing to formally interview him, but he was going to be lumped in with every other head coach candidate that they were going to talk to and that they were going to interview. He wasn't going to be getting to play favorites or anything like that. And I don't think that was something that Bill Belichick was super keen on. I think he expected to just be able to get whatever job he wanted to get. And this goes back to last year when he was available after the Patriots let him go. And look, Evan, there was a pretty big ego shot that he took when he went all in on that Falcons job and then they went and hired someone else.
Right.
I don't think Bill Belichick was overly keen on the idea of interviewing for several different jobs, including potentially the Jets, and then having them hire other people. I don't think his ego could take that. So what he did was he took the bird in the middle of his hand, which was the UNC job.
Right. That was my speculation on it, Connor. Someone, people or Jets or whoever, told him maybe. It wasn't yes, it was maybe. And we know what happened with maybe last year. He just wasn't that in demand as I think a lot of people thought that he would be. What are they going to do? I know they've started some interviewing processes. Are they going head coach first or are they doing general manager first?
They're open. I mean, you look at the guys they've interviewed so far, Tiki, and it's all people that don't have jobs right now because they can't talk to anyone currently employed by another team. So they're just getting these interviews out of the way now, and then when they're permitted to talk to other clubs, general managers and head coaches and things like that, they'll go forward with it. But I do believe that everything is on the table for this organization right now. I mean, I don't think they're opposed to hiring the coach first and then the GM or the GM and then the head coach, anything like that. I even believe that there's a world out there where everyone that I've talked to around the NFL, and this isn't shocking or breaking or anything like that, but Mike Vrabel is believed to be the guy that the Jets covet the most, which, again, it makes sense. Like, the guy is literally the top head coaching candidate out there. But there are going to be a lot of other teams out there that could potentially be interested or are going to be interested in Mike Vrabel, and he's going to have his choice of potential teams. So the one way that you could sway him to take your opportunity over others is obviously money, which I do believe the Jets can be willing to open up the paycheck to get or open up the bank account to get him. But also maybe saying, look, Mike, come on in here and then we'll help, or you can contribute or key in on some of the general managers that we might be talking to and have a hand in picking that as well. Because where things went super south for him in Tennessee was not necessarily he had this incredible relationship with John Robinson, but once they got rid of Robinson, he did not mesh with the management that they brought in.
Right. He wanted some more control over it, right? And that's ultimately why they moved on.
Understandably so.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't think, like, if the Jets hired Mike Vrabel, he's not going to be the GM head coach. I don't think there's going to be too many of those out there anymore. But I could see them potentially saying to Vrabel, look, you want to have a hand in picking the GM? Absolutely. We'll take all your consideration or all your thoughts into consideration. So we'll see. I mean, this is still so very early that it's nothing set in stone yet.
Is it too simplistic then that when you hear the name John Robinson, who's one of the guys they're going to interview, that, oh, it's a package deal. They get John Robinson. Mike Vrabel comes along. Is that not how that would play out in their interest in Robinson?
No, I don't think that's the case at all. In fact, admittedly, I didn't know too much about John Robinson other than the fact that he was the Titans' ex-general manager. Mm-hmm. I went back and looked at him. He's got a pretty decent draft record. Yeah, like some of the guys. I mean, look, he made mistakes. Isaiah Wilson was a terrible pick. Traded away A.J. Brown. Like, there were mistakes that they made. But his draft picks were pretty good. He also had one losing season. His entire tenure there, he had one losing season, made the playoffs with two different coaches. I mean, he was pretty successful. So I think that probably played more of a role than talking to him.
How does this problem? So I'm fascinated. How does this process work? So when they're interviewing a GM, and I don't think these interviews have happened yet, but they're going to happen soon. Is it with Woody immediately? Is it with, who is it with? Is it with Mike Tannenbaum? How does this process work in terms of who they're actually interviewing with?
Yeah, so Tannenbaum and the 33rd team basically compiled names for the Jets and said, look, this is the group of guys that we believe you guys should interview. And then the Jets with Jaime and Woody and Christopher and all their brass, they're then the ones that are going to interview these guys and then pick which one they want to hire. This isn't like when Charlie Casserly and Ron Wolf did it, where basically they're like, hey, hire Todd Bowles, hire Mike Maccagnan, go. Like, this, they're giving them names, and then the Jets will pick from that list of names. But I usually, like, the first round of interviews could be done on Zoom, and then the second round of interviews is in person, and then third round will be something like that.
Are they putting their own names on, Connor?
That wouldn't surprise me. That wouldn't surprise me.
When they interview these general managers and eventually coaches, they will, I'm assuming, ask about Aaron Rodgers. Is that a trick question? Like, are the Jets looking for them to answer the Aaron Rodgers question a certain way? And then that will help them get hired or not?
Good question. No, I don't think so. I really don't. I mean, I think that I know everyone's looking at this game that Aaron just played. Now, it is important to remember that the Jaguars literally have the worst pass defense in the entire NFL. Like, I looked it up after the game. I was like, man, he really balled out. And then I looked, it's like, oh, yeah, the Jaguars stink. Like, that kind of played a role in it a little bit. Like, again,
they give
Aaron
up the most 20-yard passes of any team in the league by about 12.
Mm. Oh, yeah, dude, and, like, the Garrett Wilson touchdown, like, Garrett's wide open. The one to Devontae, like, the 70-yarder, gorgeous pass, but he's behind the defense by, like, three steps.
Right, that's Tampa, too. Like,
yeah.
There's supposed to be a middle-field defender, and the two deep safeties are supposed to be the deepest guys on the field.
Yeah, they're bad. Jaguars are bad. They're 3-10 for a reason. They're a very, very bad football team. They were actually slated to pick one overall up until like who'd they beat? The Raiders last week?
Guess who I'm calling next weekend, Connor? The Jags and the Raiders.
There you go. Enjoy that one. I think that the Aaron Rodgers situation right now, from everything that I have been told, it is highly, highly unlikely still that he returns. However, it's going to be a Woody Johnson decision. It's going to be a new head coach decision. It's going to be a new general manager decision that decides on whether or not Rodgers returns to the Jets next year. And also, by the way, Rodgers has a say in it as well, where he could say, I'd actually prefer to retire. Right. I don't want to keep playing. I think he probably does still want to play based off of my discussions and my understandings. He sounds very much like a person that still wants to go out there and give it another year and not go out like this. But I think if he doesn't like the head coach GM, he could very well decide to retire. But I don't think there's any trick question. Again, it's unlikely that he returns. But if the new GM and head coach come in here and be like, look, let's draft a guy at 8. Let's have him sit behind Aaron for a year. Let's run it back. We still have talent. I don't think that's completely ruled out.
Then, because we were debating this earlier, and my initial reaction, and I agree with you, I don't want to judge the Jacksonville game. I don't want to judge any game that he plays the rest of the year. But my initial reaction is they got to move on. I mean, I'm done with this Aaron Rodgers experiment. But Tiki always says, okay, if he doesn't come back, who's your quarterback? And the truth is, it's Tyrod Taylor and somebody you draft. It's not the best option for 2025. So I've given it second thought as a Jet fan. Like, all right, is it worth bringing him back? You know, seeing if they can run it back with better coaching. But you have said it's highly unlikely he comes back. Why is it highly unlikely? Is it the cap hit in the future? Is it something else? Why?
No, I don't think it's the cap hit in the future. I think that there's a lot that comes with Aaron. Like, it's not like you're bringing back Eli Manning, or it's not like you're bringing back Matt Stafford, or it's not like you're bringing back Ben Roethlisberger. Like, it's not someone who's going to go with the flow and do what the coach says. I mean, look, Aaron, it's very obvious. Like, this was like it with McCarthy, when it was like with LaFleur, and now what it's been like here is he wants things done a certain way. He expects things done a certain way, and that he's very opinionated. He has no problem at all sharing his opinion. He has the outlet every week on the Pat McAfee show. He also talks to us every Wednesday and says many of the same things. He has no problem with that stuff. That does rub a lot of people the wrong way. It can rub some teammates the wrong way. It can rub ownership the wrong way. I mean, the coaches here are all on board with them, so it doesn't rub them the wrong way. But you're signing up for a lot. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot that comes with it other than just what happens on the field. There's a lot of off-the-field stuff as well. The Jets were on board with that a couple years ago when they thought they were going to go to the playoffs and make these runs and things like that. It grates on you when you're not winning. And I think that there's a large contingent of people within this Jets building right now that are just kind of done, that they're just, I'm over it. I don't want this anymore. Let's just start fresh. They're done with everything that comes with Aaron in addition to the play as well. I think that they're just kind of at their end.
Right. Connor, give us just real quickly the cap implications of him staying leaving, because I know it's a little bit complicated because of all of the void years.
Oh, yeah. I wish you guys told me that. I had it written down before. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's like $36 million, or is it 40? When I'm done with this, I'll text you guys, because I have it written down upstairs.
All right, perfect.
I just have to get it, because it's very confusing. Like, I called one agent and he was like, I'm looking at this contract. It looks like they've got $80 million in dead money. And I was like, no way. So I called someone over at the check, and they walked me through it like two weeks ago, but it's just not off the top.
But that's
of my head,
not but. The. But to your point, that's not the main reason why they'd want to move on. It's the other stuff.
No, I don't think so. No, it's not. It's not that crazy. It's the number. Like, I originally thought it was going to be 60 million. I was like, oh my God, that's going to kill him. It's not that dramatic. I can't remember if it's like 35 or 45 million, and then you can space it off with post June 1, or just eat it all in 2025,
right,
or 2025 and 2026, where it's like 12 million and then 30 million, something along those lines.
Right.
Like, it's a lot. I mean, it is a lot of money. It's not ideal, but it's not like this backbreaking, oh my God, $100 million, you know, dead charge.
Connor, the other veteran, not issue, but I mean, situation you got to think about is Davante Adams, because he's got a big number next year just from a cap hit. Forget the dead cap hit, but just from a cap hit. What's the plan with Davante?
Well, that's the really interesting one. That's the one that is the most interesting decision to me, because Davante can still play.
Yes.
And as a compliment to Garrett Wilson, the number two to Garrett Wilson, he'd be a great 1-2 punch. Like, that is really something that I would be intrigued with and interested with in seeing. I think the big thing with him as well is that, what does he want? Because when he left the Packers in the first place, he went to the Raiders because he wanted to play with a quarterback that he knew in Derek Carr.
Mm-hmm.
When Derek Carr left and then he wanted to leave the Raiders, he wanted to go back to a quarterback that he knew, which is why he was tied to the Saints and the Jets with Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
If Aaron Rodgers is gone, I don't necessarily know if Devontae in the twilight of his career is like, okay, let me run it back here with a rookie quarterback in Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's something he would sign on for. And talking to Devontae, I don't know if he knows exactly yet what he wants.
Yeah, it sounds like a Stephon Diggs situation. You send him with a young quarterback. Yeah. You hope that he helps that young quarterback grow, but it could be equally great or equally a disaster.
Yeah.
Right. And that is the...
Oh, real quick, guys, I got it for you. If they cut Aaron Rodgers straight up, so they just cut him, no post-first June designation, it's a $49 million dead charge in 2025. If they post June 1st cut him, it's $14 million in 2025, $35 million in 2026, but they wouldn't be able to use that money that they save until after June 1st. So again, it's not ideal, but it's not like $100 or $80 million or anything like that.
I'll tell you, based on that, I would take my medicine right away. I would just take the $49 million hit right away.
That's a lot.
Well, because
it's a quarter of the cap.
I get it, but to Connor's point, you described the quarterback universe without Aaron Rodgers. Isn't it a rookie enter Rod Taylor? Like, it's not, they're not signing Sam Darnold. They're not signing or trading for a veteran. Like, it would literally be Taylor who's here and some young quarterback, whether it's Jordan Travis or someone they draft, correct? It's no one else.
Right. And by the way, teams have done this and been somewhat successful. Look at the Denver Broncos. They took a massive cap hit on Russell Wilson. They drafted a young quarterback and he's doing okay.
Yeah. To me, that's how you got to handle it. I don't want to spread it out over 2 years. Doesn't make any sense. We're talking to Connor Hughes of SNY. Does a great job, Jets and Giants. Speaking of the Giants, where do things stand right now with the job status of Joe Shane and Brian Daboll from what you're hearing?
I don't know how Brian Daboll keeps his job. And I think I talked to you guys about this a few weeks ago. That one of the coaches that actually I know around the NFL, he was talking to me and he said that he spoke to Brian Daboll and Daboll was telling him that he felt he was coaching for his job this year.
Wow.
So this isn't some surprise. Like this isn't like what's gone happen with the Giants, the way Dable's gone into it. It's not like if he loses his job, he's like, oh man, I'm totally caught with my pants down. Like they knew going into this one. Joe Shane is the one that I think has been operating this entire time as I am safe. I am good. I am fine. It's gotten so bad that even when the Giants knew they probably weren't going to make the playoffs this year and it wasn't going to be a great year this year, I don't think they envisioned this. Like, this is horrible. Yeah. I mean, they are trending towards a year where they were supposed to be celebrating their 100th year. They're trending towards their worst season in franchise history. 2-15 is abysmal. I don't see how guys keep their jobs with that. When you analyze this roster, and if you want to say unequivocally, no doubt, they are better here, where are those areas? You can say from when they inherited, when they took over 3 years ago, you can say receiver, where they've got Wandale and they've got Malik, and there's one. And then you can say pass rusher with Brian Burns and Kayvon Thibodeau. The offensive line is, it's better than what it was, but it's patchwork.
Right.
Jermaine Illuminor is not a long-term answer. Greg Van Roten is not a long-term answer. John Michael Schmitz is struggling mightily again. Andrew Thomas has spent the last 2 years in the injured reserve. So like, I don't see where you can say like, oh, this is why they should keep their job. This is why they're so much better. Like, where is it? Like, you don't go 9-7-1 to 6-11 and 2-15 and be like, hey, we should all keep our jobs. I mean, it's just, I know John Mara does not want change. I know he wants to stay the course. I know he wants stability, but stability for the sake of just stability, that's how you get into a rut of forever. And somebody made this point. I forget who it was on social media. It might've been Dan Duggan, but I think it was a really, really smart point. But he said, if you keep this regime, head coach and general manager, they are going to force a quarterback pick, whether Shador or Cam Ward are worth a first overall pick or not. They are going to force it because they know they need a quarterback, because they know we need to save our job. So they're going to force the quarterback, and then they're going to spend dumb money in free agency, and you run the risk of putting the Giants back 2, 3, 4 years. A new regime comes in. They're not going to do that. They're going to know they're going to have a new leeway. They can look at the quarterback class and say, you know what, guys? This isn't it right now. Like, let's figure out a different way. Maybe it's Sam Darnold, and we go Travis Hunter, and then we recoup some extra draft picks by trading back, and then we can use and go up in next year's class, which is going to be better. I just think if you run it back there, it's, man, you're running the risk of a lot of trouble.
Yeah, a lot of trouble. Yeah, the challenge, and this is just from an ownership standpoint, Connor, is that you know Dave's can coach. He just hasn't had the right roster. But then you look at this recent draft class, and you're like, man, all of these guys hit, right? Every one of them. Tyrone Tracy in the fifth round and Theo Johnson before he got hurt. Obviously, the two secondary pieces, they're both going to be really good players, and Malik Nabers is fantastic. So you hit, you know, you got a good coach, but it's not the right one with this roster. It's convoluted, and it becomes one of those questions. Well, whose fault is it? And when you start trying to place blame, it gets circular, and that becomes impossible.
Yeah. And then what are you going to do again? Like, are you going to say to Dable, like, okay, well, we need to make changes, so now we're going to fire Shane Bowen. Okay, well, he wanted changes when he fired Wink Martindale, which is why he went to Shane Bowen. And also, by the way, he stripped Kafka of his play-calling responsibilities and took him over, and now the offense is worse. What more changes can you do? What more can you want?
Do you think, because it's interesting what you said about Dable earlier, that he felt he was coaching for his job, and Joe Shane seemed very like, oh, I got this. Like, when he did that press conference, I'll be back. Can you see a scenario where ownership changes one piece and keeps the other, or do you think it would be a package deal the way we all assumed it was when they were first hired?
I can foresee a situation where the Giants fire Brian Dable and keep Joe Shane, and among the reasons is that John Mara alluded to this when we spoke to him at the NFL owners meeting, where he literally said they are not a package deal. Like, that was one of the questions was asked there, and it was direct, and I guess I'm used to like Woody Johnson and Christopher Johnson when they spoke. So when John Mara was basically just like, yeah, here's everything I'm going to tell. It was an amazing press conference. And like the Giants guys were like, Connor, this happens every time he speaks. I was like, wow, this is awesome. So like he literally said, they're not a package deal. Like John was like, they are not a package deal. I'm grading them independently. So I told you he's willing to move on from one or the other.
Right. Let me ask you this then. Who's done better at their job over the last 3 years, Joe Shane or Brian Dable?
I think Dable's done a better job than Joe Shane.
I agree.
I do. Yeah. I mean, I know this draft is good, but I think that, I mean, it's, again, we're really, really getting the nitty-gritty of this one. Right. He's been great.
Connor, we were talking about the drafts, and the first one was bad. Obviously, there's a ton of question marks in the second one.
Was worse.
This one hit. Right, you're right. The second one is just question marks. Like, Dante Banks? Who the hell is he? Right? How good is he? Or is he just Wink's guy, and he stinks in every other system type of thing? Trey Hawkins, et cetera, et cetera. But the challenge becomes not the draft. It's the free agency.
Yeah.
Right. And I was alluding back to my years where a lot of those guys on those 2000 team, they were free agents.
Yeah.
Right. Antonio Pierce was a free agent who, you know, pro scouted and came to the team. He was fantastic. LeVar Arrington before he got hurt, Ron Stone and Glenn Parker and all these guys that I remember from my early years, they were brought as free agents and they helped us become a winning organization. That hasn't happened here. And you see it when the young players get hurt. And all of a sudden, you're challenged depth-wise, and the product is not good enough. I said this on my broadcast. It's just, it becomes an unwatchable product on Sundays, and that's not good, and nobody's accepting that.
And Tiki, there was, what's fascinating about that, too, is that at his mid-season press conference, I asked Joe as well. I said, like, well, is there anything that you need to change or adapt in terms of your evaluation of who you pay and who you don't? And he immediately, he was prepped for it. He immediately goes, well, who are you talking about? So I was like, well, you can go Leonard Williams. You can go Xavier McKinney, Saquon. He goes, well, we got Tyrone Tracy and we got Tyler Newbin and we like those players. Tyler Newbin might be a very, very good player, right, Tiki?
Yes.
And Tracy certainly looks like a very good player. But you get what you pay for.
Right. They're not Saquon Barkley or Xavier McKinney.
Yeah, McKinney leads the NFL in receiving yards and is on his way to an all-pro year. Newbin had zero interceptions before he got injured. Now he's on the IR. Tracy looks like a very good player, but she's not going to win MVP this year. So, you didn't pay those players, but the guys you replaced them with, while competent and while solid, they're not these all-pro players. So there's a lot of flawed aspects of the team right now. I think there's a lot of ego involved. I think there's some arrogance involved. I mean, it's just, it's not a great spot to be in. And the free agent spot, the free agent signings, they haven't necessarily, there's no answer. Like Bobby Okereke is a good player. It's not Antonio Pierce.
No.
I mean, they're trades. Darren Waller, the Giants, look, you talk to anyone in with the Raiders and they would have told you Waller was talking about retirement his final year there.
Right.
And the Giants traded for him expecting them to get 3 years out of him. Like there's a lot of mistakes made by this team. And again, Evan, actually, I posed this one to you because I had this conversation in the media room the other day and I thought it was a decent argument. The Giants are kind of saying, and when Joe Shane says we're close, they're just a quarterback away, right? They need a couple pieces and then the quarterback.
No, they're not.
No, think about the Jets, though. Like when the Jets had Sauce and Garrett and Breece and all those players that they drafted, and then they went out there and got Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
Compare that team, the quarterback away Jets, to the quarterback away Giants.
Not
like,
even close.
I think just from a talent perspective, there's a difference. Now, the Jets coaching was a disaster. That's why they fell off the rails and all that. But.
Yes.
Yeah, it's to me, it's completely different. I think that's Shane's way of trying to explain to all of us why he thinks he should come back, honestly. Yeah. But I don't think they're a quarterback away. One last thing. You mentioned at the top about the Jets wanting Mike Vrabel, that being the guy that they want the most. Does Vrabel really want us? Because I'm skeptical about how appealing this job is to the outside world, and maybe that's me being a negative Jet fan. Maybe that's it. And I know that there was that report a few weeks ago that Vrabel would be open to the Jet job with the right GM, but with the Bear job out there, with potentially the Giant job out there, do you think he's going to want the Jets the way the Jets want him?
No, I don't. I don't think he'll want the Jets the way the Jets want him. I don't think anyone will want the Jets the way the Jets are going to want Vrabel. It's, you know, that's the difference. Like, it's a difference between liking someone and loving someone. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, like that's kind of the friend zone, right? But like, you got to break your way out of the friend zone. That's what the Jets got to do with Vrabel at the moment.
Like,
but I think that there's a chance that they can make it. And I think the fact that Vrabel, from my understanding, is willing to listen to the Jets is a key first step. Now they got to sell him. Now this isn't going to be like, with Vrabel, I don't think it's going to be a normal interview where, like, the Jets, you know, he has to convince the Jets to hire him. I think it might be the other way around, and we'll see if they're willing to do it. But again, like, this is a different situation with the Jets, man. There's a lot of good pieces there. The offensive line looks legitimately rebuilt. They're going to have a good draft pick. They've got the receiver. They got the running back. They've got some people they got to pay, but, like, there is legitimate talent here. It's not like 15 or 17 or 20. Like, it's a different Jets team that I think makes it appealing. You just have to have the other things that surround the Jets answered. You have to have those questions. What's the budget going to look like? What's the involvement going to look like outside? How much am I going to have a say compared to somebody else? Will there be other hands involved or at play here? All of those things need to be answered before you get someone like Mike Vrabel, but he's willing to listen, and if he's willing to listen, you got a chance.
Yep. Thank you, Connor. We appreciate you hopping on. Good stuff, Connor.
No problem, guys. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you very much. Great. Connor Hughes, SNY, Jets, Giants stuff. Rewind if you're just tuning in, and you can hear everything he had to say about Mike Vrabel and Brian Daboll being on the hot seat, everything. We'll get to your calls to react to it coming up at 888-808-1019. And Steve Cohen, in his finest hour, a little passive-aggressive against Met fans. We'll explain why coming up. How about that? A lot of interesting things from Connor Hughes. If you missed it, you can rewind on the Odyssey app. Our conversation began at around 4:05. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Sean's got his Cinco de Fivo list, and we'll unveil the next two moments from this year in 24 and 24, the most memorable sports moments in our area of this year. But it is time for your Sports IQ trivia question, which is presented by your Tri-State Cadillac dealers and the all-electric Cadillac Lyric. This is a good question. Who came up with this question?
I did.
Good job. Sean just raised his hand. He's taking claim as well. Was it Tommy or was it Sean?
Tommy, you lie enough on the air. Don't lie now.
Okay. So when Evan puts you up to something, who gets the credit for it? Evan, I'm the one that got Sean to come up with the question. So I deserve the credit for it.
When I put Sean up to something,
when you are
the
mastermind and he is like your soldier of fortune, you should get the credit for that because you are the mastermind.
I don't want the credit for it, though.
But I do. You asked who came up with the question.
But when I do put Sean up to
Sean wanted
brilliant things,
to do like a Ranger question. I was like, hockey?
Rangers.
On.
Rangers.
Yeah, exactly. I know it's a sports IQ question, but
No.
Well, what was the question? What date is Laviolette going to be fired?
By the way,
sorry.
Along those lines,
yes.
Tommy said, you know, we haven't done hockey yet. I went to dig something. I said, you know, I don't have anything clever enough. And I went to this question.
Okay, well, here's the question. Name the last Braves player before Max Fried to sign with the Yankees on a 5-year or more contract. That's a good one. So the last time a Brave player signed, or a former Brave player, signed with the New York Yankees on a contract of 5 or more years.
It's not just former Brave player. Brave to Yankee.
Braves to Yankees.
Yep.
I have a guess. Obviously, I'm not going to give it because it's up to you right now to be caller number 6 at 866-540-WFAN, 866-540-9326 to answer your Sports IQ trivia question. And you could win a $250 American Express gift card. Your Sports IQ trivia question is presented by your Tri-State Cadillac dealers and the all-electric Cadillac Lyric.
Remember, 5 or more.
No,
long-term deal.
I got you. I have a guess, but I can't give it right now because someone is going to call in and try to win this contest.
Okay.
But I do have a guess. Can I tell you who it's not?
No, you cannot.
I can't even say who it's not.
Because
that's what somebody's thinking, and they're going to guess that, and they're going to know that it's wrong.
Thank you, Tiki.
Okay. That's a great question, though.
Stop being smart, dude.
He can't help himself.
Let other people.
You're right. I don't even know if I'd be right. I may be wrong. Like, I may not be smart.
I know, but if you're wrong and we tell you you're wrong, then whoever can eliminate that, and they can guess.
That's true. Then I'm helping the people out. But I'm a very helpful person. By the way, I'm going to read you a tweet, and then you tell me if you think this is passive-aggressive.
Posted and toasted extended version.
Yes, it is.
You're wrong.
Now, I want to say I love Steve Cohen. All right? Steve Cohen is a wonderful man who has delivered us Met fans Juan Soto, and I'm very appreciative of that.
Steve Cohen. That's who tweeted this.
Right? You are correct.
Yes, I nailed
Steve
it.
Cohen. Nailed it. But I want to read you the tweet. It happened over the weekend, and remember, Steve doesn't tweet very often, okay? In fact, the last time he had tweeted until this weekend was October 21st after the New York Mets got eliminated by the LA Dodgers, and it was a very nice, hey, proud of the team, we showed a lot of grit, it was all good. Listen to this tweet and tell me if this is passive-aggressive.
Right, let's hear it.
I want to thank Met fans for responding to the Soto signing. Ticket sales exploded this week versus last week. We were 18th in MLB attendance last year. Any predictions where we end up this year?
Yeah, because nobody wants to predict. He's just telling people, go make it better.
Exactly.
He's not like, I don't want an answer. Make it better.
He's saying to you guys.
I wonder who vetted that for him.
I don't think anyone did. I think that was Steve, and I get this as a businessman saying, hey, we had a bad attendance here last year, which he's right about. We talked about it a lot on the air.
Yeah.
We had a bad attendance
here. Even when they were good.
Yeah. It took a while. Like the last very end, it kind of popped up for the Philly series. But before that, it was
a
bad year.
A lot of that was Philly, though.
Correct. Not as much as I thought.
Well, that's what we speculated.
Not as much as I thought. It actually turned out to be like a really awesome Met crowd.
Right.
And then obviously the playoffs were amazing, as you'd expect.
They listened to us because we said the Phillies are not going to come here and celebrate on our field and have their crowd be here as well.
That's right.
And they didn't even have a reason to celebrate.
They didn't get to celebrate. I'm telling you, there were not as many Philly fans as I thought. So I think Steve was frustrated by what happened last year. Rightfully so as a businessman. He just dropped $752 million in guaranteed money. Going to be more than that probably when it's all said and done. And his answer is like, all right, guys. All right. You better pack this building.
Mm-hmm.
I better see us be top 8 in attendance. And so,
help
I get
me out,
it.
Man. Help me out.
But that was...
Can a brother get a dime?
But you would agree that was a passive-aggressive tweet?
I mean, I don't want to say it was passive-aggressive because I think it was just aggressive. It was just... We all know what just happened. You guys didn't show up last year. Come to the ballpark.
Yeah, you better show
that's
up.
That's basically what he said without saying all of that.
Yeah, that's what I took out of that. I could hear him being angry in the tweet, even if he wasn't angry.
Uh-huh.
Like, all right, you bastards. I just dropped $800 million, okay?
Right. The expectation is not like it was last year, where everybody listened to Max and Verlander thinking that we were going to stink and not even try.
Yeah.
But that is not the expectation. We are expecting to win. And next week, I'm signing Pete Alonso, so you better be back.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because here's what I'm curious about. Now, don't count me. I'm a sucker. I'm a season ticket holder through good years, bad years, great off seasons, bad off, whatever. The Mets' approval rating in this town and Steve's approval rating in this town is incredibly high. They signed Juan Soto. They took him away from the New York Yankees, the thing that most people never thought could happen. If the Mets have a very quiet offseason the rest of the way, Pete Alonso ends up in Chicago. They replace him with, you know, Carlos Santana on a one-year deal.
Chicago would be disappointing.
Okay. Mm. They don't add an ace. Like, basically, they just bring in, you know, a Griffin Canning to fill out the rotation. And the rest of the offseason is very quiet.
Mm.
How would Met fans view this offseason as they buy their tickets getting ready for 2025?
It would be hard to get overly excited. You're going to be excited because it's Juan Soto.
Right.
And he's just an entertaining player. He's a reason to go to the ballpark, even if you're just going to watch Juan Soto. That's fact.
Sure.
It's kind of like Aaron Judge. Probably to a lesser extent right now. But eventually, maybe he gets there. But the reality is, the rotation is not ready.
Oh, no, I understand.
For prime time, so to speak. I guess the bullpen has a couple of pieces that you're excited about, but you don't really know whether or not it's going to be viable for the same type of run that you made a year ago. And so I don't think you're going into the season, if they do nothing else, going, oh, yeah, we're definitely better than the Dodgers.
No, I don't even think it'd be close.
Until you get close to being better than the Dodgers, or at least on par with the Dodgers, then I think there's still going to be some of that, well, we just got to wait and see.
Well, forget the Dodgers. I think that they would go into the season behind the Braves and the Phillies as well in the NL East. I don't think
the Braves are losing Fried.
Right? I understand, but they're also getting Spencer Strider back, Acuna back, and they're a very good team. Despite all their injuries last year, they finished with the same record as the Mets. Despite all of that. Look, I don't think that's going to happen. I think the Mets are going to have more biggish moves the rest of this offseason. But I'll make you this prediction. It is only December 17th. If we're sitting here in the middle of February and the Mets have done little else, you will hear a different tone from
Mets
fans.
Well, that's the problem.
That's what you'll hear.
That's the problem with the Major League Baseball offseason. They really teased us this year.
Yeah.
Like, teased us.
Why? Because we had a hot week?
Because we had a hot week.
Yeah.
And we never get that, ever. Yeah. All the big free agents last year waited till the end, and really nothing happened. And so it happened, and they were like, oh, Juan Soto, now the ball's going to start moving on everybody. It's going to go back into, like, this passive, let's just talk. We'll talk next week. Christmas is here. Mm. Oh, New Year's. We'll hit you in January. Make that mid-January. I'm going on vacation with the family. Like, it's going to slow down now, and it's going to get frustrating for my – I want to see what my team looks like before we get to February. It might not happen.
And here's what's really frustrating, and I'm going to write this down. December 17th, 4:45 p.m., it's time for long-term prediction time. Mm. And this is an interesting one.
When does Pete Alonso sign?
Exactly. It's not where he signs. You guys have already done that when I was gone. It's not how much money he makes. It's when does he sign? And I'm going to start this off because I have a very strong opinion about it that may not be popular. February 20th.
February 20th.
That's right. Spring training will basically open. It'll be the opening days of spring training.
And he's not going to be signed?
And Pete Alonso will then sign a few days into spring training. So my official Alonso signing prediction date is February 20th, 2025. And I know what my wife's thinking if she happens to be in the car right now listening. Thank God I got rid of that beard.
Mm. Yes.
Oh, break the glass. We got a baseball trade. You just said it was quiet, Tiki. You liar.
Damn it. We were trying to get it before Evan
saw
it. All right. Pete Alonso's done here, folks.
No, it's not.
This, according to Ken Rosenthal.
Don't do that.
Are you serious?
I don't know about Pete Alonso.
Okay. He's coming back.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding. Jeff
Paston. Son of a bitch.
Jeff Paston reporting Cody Bellinger has been traded from the Cubs to the New York Yankees.
Nice.
Bellinger, former MVP.
I mean, that was obvious that it was going to happen. It was just a matter of when.
Yeah, we don't get what they gave up here.
Well, we do have what they gave up. Oh. It's Cody Petit. Cody Petit, who I know you like, and actually is a decent arm.
Yeah.
Decent swing arm, but Cody Petit's going back to Chicago. The Cubs are sending money. And that was the holdup over the last 5 days.
Interesting.
Tiki literally just said.
All right.
It's boring
but
now.
But you know what? This one doesn't count.
This was inevitable.
It was inevitable. You just get, we're just having this back and forth with it. You know what? We're going to move on to other first base options.
Right.
That's what you got from the Yankees today. Like, wait, hold on. All right. We'll just take money. All right.
Well, that's good. This was the deal. And we talked about this late last week.
We knew this was going to happen.
This was inevitable. Yeah. It was inevitable because it was all about money. Mm-hmm. The Chicago Cubs obviously just traded for Kyle Tucker. They're also in the market for a first baseman. They may go after Pete Alonso. And they were moving on from Cody Bellinger. He opted in to year two of his contract, which is for $27 million. He also has an opt-in on year three.
Yeah, which is a steal if you get it while you get it.
A steal in what regard?
For him.
Oh, for Cody. Absolutely.
That's what I mean.
Absolutely. By the way, did you cut the audio I suggested earlier? I said to Loogie, I know he didn't. It's okay. An hour ago, I said, hey, let's find audio of the WWE crowds chanting Cody.
Oh, yeah.
So if Cody Bellinger gets traded, we could just start playing it. Little did we know the trade would happen in an hour. So, Sean, can you do that now? Thanks.
Yeah, sure. And by trading Petit, the Yankees give up something small. So,
because Petit.
Wow.
But Bellinger's due to make 27.
They also got $5 million in cash.
Okay, so that's the number. So Cody Bellinger is due to make $27 million this year. He opted into the deal. He has an opt-in for next year, but it all depends on what kind of year he has. Like, if Cody Bellinger comes back to his MVP form of, let's say, 5 years ago, not likely, but you never know, when he was one of the better players in baseball back in 2019, then he's opting out. It's pretty logical. He's still relatively young, and so that money goes away. If he has the year he had last year, which was a respectably solid season, he opts in at $25 million. So the Cubs, you're saying, are kicking in $5 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I assume that's for this year. So now Bellinger is making about $22.5 million that the Yankees have to pay.
Yes.
which is a little bit of an overpay, but still, it's not a long-term contract. It's only this year and potentially
only,
next year.
He's 29,
year.
So you don't know if he gets right back to where he was.
Well, I guess my question to you would be is, what is where he was? Because Cody Bellinger is an interesting piece in that he's had very different years in his career. So, for example...
So you don't really know what he is.
Well, the best of Cody Bellinger was the 2019 National League MVP. He hit 47 home runs.
Jeez.
Hit 305 with a 1,035 OPS. That's not who he is because he followed that up. I don't even want to count 2020, so I'll use 2021.
Yeah.
By hitting 165 with 10 home runs, a negative war, and a 542 OPS.
How many games?
95 games. He followed that up in 2022 by hitting 210 with 19 home runs and a 654 OPS, and he ended up getting benched. He then goes to Chicago, where in 2023, he hit 307 with 26 home runs and an 880 OPS. Not quite the MVP, but certainly a hell of a player.
Right.
And then last year was really in the middle. He hit 266. He hit 18 home runs. He hit a 750 OPS. Not all-star worthy, but certainly not the MVP, but also not the guy who fell off a cliff in 21 and 22. So when you say Cody Bellinger gets back to what he was, I'm kind of thinking more 23 than 2019.
Well, forget the peaks. Forget the edges of this, because you could call them outliers, right? From his MVP season where he was ridiculous to his, what did he hit, 165 in 2021? So forget those. Toss those out. So it sounds like he's probably... 270 hitter, right? Maybe mid to high 20 home runs. This is what the best you can expect from him. Mid to high 20 home runs and an OPS around 800, 810. Something like that.
Right.
If you get that, then that's probably a good season for Cody Bellinger.
Yes.
And this is his year 29 season coming up. And you don't, if he can do that consistently, it's a good signing.
I agree. I think if he puts up what he put up last year, he's still a nice, solid player. His K rate has gone down over the years. Now, the other thing to keep in mind about Bellinger, and this is the beauty of Cody Bellinger when I laid him out as a plan B option. Remember that? My plan B is coming together right now, guys.
It is. It is.
Was that he
Except we didn't have Fried.
Right. That was my plan B part two. Yes, you're right. Cody Bellinger can be the Yankees' first baseman. He could also be the center fielder. That's the beauty of him. He doesn't have to be the first baseman. And I would think that based on where this offseason goes, that's going to determine that.
Well, who else are you putting in first?
Christian Walker? Pete Alonso?
You mean go get another, so you're not done getting potential first base?
The Yankees are definitely not done. They needed to add three bats after they lost Juan Soto, so this is bat number one. But the beauty of Bellinger is because of his great versatility of being able to play first base and center field, the offseason will help dictate the next piece you get.
He can potentially mitigate the Martian if he doesn't come around.
I want to make this clear. I don't believe the report, but it's Bob Nightingale, so I have to tell you this.
A report on what regard?
Around Bellinger. That Bellinger has been told by the Yankees he will be their center fielder.
That's interesting. It's possible. I don't know. See, what I would think
is... So that means that they're going big game hunting for a first baseman?
Or not even big game hunting. They could go Carlos Santana hunting or Paul Goldschmidt hunting. Or they could go big game hunting, Christian Walker, Pete Alonso. I would think that Brian Cashman... Not saying Bob's making that up, but I would think that his approach to Cody would be, we'll let you know. Let's see where this offseason goes. If Anthony Santander falls in our arms, you may be our first baseman.
But
if a first baseman falls in our arm, you may be our center fielder.
But what does he always also say? I bring in the players. That's Aaron Boone's job.
Right, but he's still bringing in the players. So depending on the players he brings in.
So my point is, why would Brian Cashman tell Cody Bellinger, who then somehow gets it leaked to Bob Nightingale, that you're playing center field when he can do either, when Brian Cashman will say that's Aaron Boone's job?
Well, that's because that's what he tells us publicly. It doesn't mean that's not what he's telling and Aaron Boone.
That's what I'm saying. So why would he tell somebody else that privately?
I don't believe it fully because I think that this offseason still has the flexibility for Cody to either be the center fielder or the first baseman.
And I have one more Tiki rabbit hole. Is this the first Cody for Cody trade in MLB history?
Oh, that's right. Cody Petit. So it's Cody for Cody.
I have a better rabbit hole for Tiki. Do we want to address the elephant in the room?
Go ahead.
Why things are going to be awkward in the clubhouse for the Yankees? Cody Bellinger's, and look, it's their personal life, but it's out there. Cody Bellinger's wife dated Giancarlo Stanton.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, that's not true.
Hold on a second. Cody Bellinger's wife dated Giancarlo Stanton?
Uh-huh.
Like while they were married?
No. It's his ex-girlfriend.
Wait a second.
So She's an SI supermodel.
So Giancarlo and Cody dated the same girl.
Mm-hmm.
Cody obviously married her.
Correct. Now, I'm sure this happens a lot. Tiki, former athlete, could speak to this more, that this happens a lot more than we know about.
Did you know about that? I had no idea.
Oh, I knew about this for a while.
That was your first reaction to the Bellinger signing?
Of course. Now, I don't think it's like, oh my God, the Yankees are going to be torn apart. But at bare minimum, we're all guys here. It's awkward. Bare minimum.
Not really.
Not really.
I don't think so.
When you have Stanton walking around with the 24-inch pythons, you're not thinking about that? Come on.
Well, that's not the python you're worried about.
Glad Tiki said it.
So am I. I'm just throwing it out there. That would be awkward, at least for me. If I found out my wife dated Evan Roberts, I'd be like, first of all, what the heck?
2018 Sports Illustrated swimsuit model.
Mm-hmm.
Modeled for Victoria's Secret with pink. Some awesome polo.
Are you checking her out or are you just reading her?
I have not actually looked at a picture of her.
Okay. I'm looking
at the text descriptions of her.
Sure. Right?
And she has two children born in 2021 and 2023 with Cody Bellinger.
Yeah, it's over now, man. They got kids. They're married.
I'm just saying, in the back of your mind, it's just it would be awkward. That's all.
After looking at her, enjoy Juan Soto. She could come to every Yankee game.
Okay, I'm glad that's your new bar.
Also, no.
Cody's got a hot wife. I'm good.
Also, Cody's home. His dad, a World Series champion. Of
course. Clay,
of course.
Right?
You got the Bellinger connection. I do think, though, the Yankees are in a great spot to now just go wherever they want to go. If the Christian Walker contract's reasonable, bring him in. He's your center fielder. He's a very good defensive center fielder. If an outfielder falls into your lap, and I don't think it will necessarily, like if I had to guess right now, I think Bob Nightingale's report is probably going to be right that he'll end up being the center fielder, because I think there are more first base options than outfield options.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to be right, but I think if you're a Cashman, you could kind of let this offseason play out a little bit, but it's a good move. And you know where? Here's where else I'll compliment the New York Yankees. The New York Yankees had a choice in negotiating this trade. Choice number one was pick up as much money as possible. And the more money the Cubs pick up, the better prospect the Yankees would have to send over. The more money the Yankees pick up, the worser prospect, if that's the right word.
The lesser.
Cody Petit, nice player, could have been a factor on this team, is not a huge prospect. So the Yankees only taking back the $5 million actually lessened what they had to give up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is certainly a positive. I mean, remember this about Cody Petit. He's 30 years old.
Yeah.
He's not a kid.
No.
They literally traded
him. He's not really even a prospect then.
No, he's not. Right. I take that back. He's not. He's just a guy that was on their team last year and pitched reasonably well when he was out there and could have been a swing guy for this team. Like, that was what his role was going to be. Like, Cody Petit's the long reliever. Now he's making a start. And I'm not saying those guys aren't valuable, but you turned it into a nice player. Even if Bellinger repeats his numbers from a year ago, which we went through, is pretty average, it's not horrible. It's not unplayable the way it was in 21 and 22. And I think if he repeats that, especially with the strikeout numbers going down and Yankee Stadium, maybe the pop he has with the porch and right, it's a great it's a very good addition.
Maybe he had long COVID and just having some after effects.
Jeez,
he finally got over it. Had a 307 season. Then he had 267, 665, whatever it was last year. So he's good.
Yeah. All right, whatever you say. You like this move, Sean? You happy as a Yankee fan?
I am. We're halfway there. I still need two more bats, and then
make an acquisition that's not 32 years old.
And not long-term detrimental with him on the contract. So I am very, very much pleased with this kind of move.
That's the great part about it. You're not wrapping yourself up long-term. Like even Devin Williams. So think about what the Yankees have done now since losing Juan Soto.
Or a guy past his prime.
Right. Guy who's like Nolan Arenado.
And I know that we've had this argument. I got a guy that wants to stick it to the Dodgers, too. So if and when we shall meet again, let's go.
That's a little bit of a reach, but
kind of former Dodger, they dumped him on his ass. They won a World Series. No.
The guy he really wants to stick it to is the Astros. Think about what Cody has said about the Astros in the past. You better be careful if you get Bregman or Correa. That would be the problem. That's a bigger problem than Giancarlo. Because I think they've accepted. You know what? She slept with Giancarlo. It happened.
They at least have to have a chat. I think they have
no,
to kind of
don't.
Yeah, you. It's
how long ago was this?
I'm not even saying that. I'm
it was
just saying
7 years ago.
Tiki, you've been in locker rooms. You know how guys are.
Seven years, not like three.
Don't you think the other players are going to go? You know what happened? Don't you think they have to kind of clear the awkwardness? They need to do something and have a joke about.
Isn't it common to be Eskimo brothers when you're in a locker room?
Yeah.
Is that an appropriate term?
I mean, I was in a fraternity, so we had
7 years ago. She was 21 years old. Like, what are you even talking about?
No, I'm just saying, maybe just to clear the air. That way everybody has a chuckle and a laugh about it. And
what's
they move
the
on.
Air to clear? We hooked up. She's married to you.
That's
I'm
it.
I'm hooking up with somebody
and
else
And we're
now.
Cool because I think Stanton has a girlfriend. Everybody's cool. We've all moved on. Then you be, you know, you become the Real Housewives of New Jersey. Tiki knows that deal.
Would you
don't
agree,
want that going on.
Would you agree, Tiki, that Lugie has no idea what he's talking about and there's never even a conversation about this?
Yeah, I don't worry about who my wife was with before me.
There you go. See? There you go. Yeah, I'm with you, too. I try to pretend she was with nobody.
I just think that...
That's what I tell myself.
I'm just saying I could see
this,
Twitter
this one, though, is publicly obvious.
No, I know, but you still can pretend to yourself.
It's public. We're not saying anything that wasn't public.
I'm not saying you are, but I'm saying as a guy, what I would do is very similar to Tiki. Yeah. I would just... Like, I pretend right now. My wife has never... She never looked at a man before we were
yeah,
together.
Yeah, but you know the deal there. You've lied about your numbers to your wife.
We never talked about it. See,
but
that's
if
the
you
beauty.
Did, you would lie about your numbers.
No.
Guys
no.
always lie. They round up. Girls
first
round up.
First of all, I would never lie, but we would never have that conversation. Because that's an inappropriate conversation to have with a person that you're with.
Yeah.
But you just don't have that conversation.
You have children now.
Yeah.
This is where Tommy might be right. If you think about it this way, everybody in that Yankee locker room and Cody Bellinger's wife have seen Big G. Bellinger has not.